exactly what I said when we started this call, and I feel like I installed a virus on my computer, and I'm blaming you for it. Oh, there's a little black dot on my file bar. What is that?
What does that mean?
Get that out of here. It says top secret control panel. They know how to freak me out. They know exactly how to freak me out.
Yeah, Discord gets really clever. Like, all their loading screens are like, you know.
I don't like that. No me gusta. No me gusta. Get that out of here.
Well,
I bet
they
put themselves into my startup items, too, I bet. Let's go see.
Yeah,
using groups.
If
login items. Oh, wait. That's Audio Hijack 3 schedule helper?
Yeah.
Hidden?
Yeah. Audio Hijack can record stuff when you're gone, if you ever need that to be done.
All right, let's remove that from startup items and quit Discord. Oh, shouldn't have done that. Definitely shouldn't have quit Discord. Oh, boy. Shouldn't have quit Discord. Definitely shouldn't have done that.
The last thing I heard was quit disc. Gone.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so we've got Discord running now instead of Skype, just to try. I don't know if it's better or worse. Like, I think it sounds better.
My vote is it sounds better, but it's also freaking me out 100 times more.
It's technically sending less data because it's got the noise gate thing. It shuts off your end when you're not talking, which is nice, but I don't know. For some reason on your end, I can hear that hiss on the tail end.
Well, maybe I haven't shut off my thing yet. Let's go to look at the settings, video, the settings in Discord.
Yeah, hit the user settings, which should open up the voice
and
video.
I'm in voice and video, and it says automatically determine input sensitivity.
Yeah.
If the indicator is solid green, then Discord is transmitting your beautiful voice. That's nice of you to say.
Yeah, I've got that switched to on.
Yeah, I have that on too.
Okay.
So it is gating me.
Okay. What about under advanced, a little lower there?
That's too advanced for me. I'm sorry, I can't go there. I'm still a beginner.
They're using everything is on voice codec, which is cool.
Everything is on in that section.
Okay. And your audio subsystem is on standard, not experimental?
I'm standard, but I would be interested in experimenting with my Discordality.
We are experimenting as it is. So let's
I don't know how I feel about this. The little Audio Hijack thing up in the file bar now, it says it when I stop talking, it goes gray, so it shows me that it's gating. I don't like something
the Discord
being that
thing.
Active. Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
I think it's kind of clever. It's good though. Like, if you're this Discord is generally not for one-on-ones. It's best for like groups and stuff. So you can do like group chats in
if I'm in hacking
rooms
or something like that. If I'm like hacking the mainframe.
Mm-hmm. It's for hackers to hang out. It's the hackers hangout.
It's but using more CPU than Logic Pro.
What is?
Discord helper.
Discord
that's
helper?
Stupid to me.
Is that the thing that you quit?
Yeah. No, well, I mean, it's the thing that's just in the corner, and I don't know how to turn that off. There's like 1,000 listeners right now just screaming at their podcaster, just being like, turn the settings! Turn it off there!
I don't know. I try not to touch the Discord settings because there are many of them, and it's really advanced because it's for like people that are streaming or something. I don't know. It's for video game people.
Light mode is too bright. My gamer eyes couldn't take it.
There's a light mode, huh? Yeah, I don't know. All my stuff is stock for the most part. I changed around some of the voice settings at first, but I found that leaving it on default is better. That way I don't have to change it in two places every time I'm playing Dungeons and Dragons.
They have a colorblind mode. That's kind of cool.
Oh, you're sick. You should try that.
They have a streamer mode also. In addition to being a gamer, you can also be a streamer.
I think this is fairly new stuff. I haven't seen the streaming stuff in here before, but...
Oh, wow. We're really breaking this thing in, huh?
Yeah, I think they're breaking into, like, the video game distribution game as well. Like, they're trying to kind of build their own Steam store in a way, from what I understand.
Here's a question. If I hit the red X in the window, are we going to get cut off again?
Oh, yeah, the eternal question. Does this just make my window go away, or does it quit everything?
All right, I'm doing it. Oh.
And you're still here.
Yeah, okay, nice. All right,
yeah,
I feel a little better
know.
About that. And then the Discord server goes away, or it minimizes, and now Logic is the big guy on campus in my activity monitor. Okay, cool. All right, well, I feel a little bit better. I still don't like the fact that I can see the gating working because I don't want my computer to work ever. My baby's not meant to work.
You could probably take that
room noise
out
from audio files.
You could probably take that out of your menu bar. You don't use Bartender on your computer?
No, I don't put things on my computer, Jacob. That's why I said this is kind of like a virus installed.
Yeah. But this is totally interesting. I guess while we're on the topic of settings and crap, the other day I asked you about this bug that I had on my phone. It's the minorest of bugs on like
a calendar widget. Not refreshing. Yeah.
It was just the widget. Everything was totally fine. And it wasn't even that I wasn't refreshing. The data was there, but the view was basically several hours in advance of where it should have been, like past the point where there are even hour markers.
Was it a time zone thing?
No. I don't know. It started I think it started during the iOS 12 beta. I'm not sure. But I've noticed
the beta program?
Yeah, I'm in the beta program. So I think it started sometime around when iOS 12 came. So it's probably something that it's probably not even a problem for other people, but it's something that bugs me because I look at that thing like 12 times a day just to see what's coming up. And it was bothering me enough that I actually took your advice and reset the settings on my iPhone before just doing the restore thing like I was going to do.
Yeah.
That is the worst thing. Resetting your settings on your iPhone is hell for like a week.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
But did it fix it?
It did. But now everything else is broken because...
Well, not broken. It's just your settings got reset. So yeah, it's like somebody came into your bedroom and just moved all the furniture around. You're like, God damn it, I got to move it back again.
That's exactly what it's like. Oh, man. That's right. It's just awful. Like every day it's one little thing. And the thing I forget is that when you reset the settings on your iPhone, it doesn't reset the settings on your watch, which is both good and bad.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So my iPhone no longer has any of the alarms that I've had accumulating from the past 2 years or however long it's been since I've reset.
That's the worst part is that the alarms are gone. I would point that out to anybody who I was saying like Wi-Fi passwords and settings and alarms are terrible to lose.
The text is really big.
Well, that's just you have your text set small on your phone?
Yeah, super small.
Oh boy.
Gotta keep those eyes sharp. In any case, yeah, this morning I woke up to an alarm going off on my watch, which was totally strange. It was an alarm for 7 o'clock in the morning, which is about an hour and a half before my phone alarms. And I didn't recognize the noise. I thought it was May's phone. And I got up and I looked over and I'm like, no, it kind of sounds like it's coming from my phone. So I pick it up and there's nothing on my screen at all. Like there's nothing there. Like, okay, so it must be her phone. I go back to sleep. But I'm like, no, wait, I just determined that it's on my side of the bed and not hers. What the hell is going on? I look at my phone again. There's nothing. And then I look at my watch, which is up on its stand, and the screen is illuminated, and there's like a alarm going off, and I couldn't figure out why. I still have no idea, but it's in a list of alarms that was on my phone 2 weeks or a couple two days ago or so, and now it's just on my watch. So now I got to figure that out. Got to get that synced again.
I switched phones a couple times within like 3 weeks, and every time I kept waking up to not my default alarm. My default alarm is the opening credits to Good Will Hunting, which is the most serene track to wake up to in the morning. I dare you to find something better than waking up to what Will Hunting wakes up in the Academy Award winning picture, Good Will Hunting.
Like the built-in chimes tone.
It's Danny Elfman. No, it's so much more than that. It's just it comes in. It's you got that little piano coming over the Miramax logo. Uh-oh. yeah, it's just so good. It's just the great thing because it eases you in. It's not like some four on the floor techno track. Aaron's alarm is like the worst alarm in the world. It's just like it's like chill. I think it's the XX. So like it's a little chill, but it comes in with like, it fades in with like some guitar, really reverb-y guitar, really high trebly, and everything like drum track, and it's just not good. Like you want to ease into the morning and like wake up with your song, and that's what I do with Danny Elfman every morning. But when I switched phones, It was not so great because it was just the default, like, ticka-ding-ding, ticka-ding-ding alarm that comes in, mm-hmm. you know, that one. And because apparently I think if you don't authorize your iTunes library, it just defaults, like, it can't load your default alarms if you haven't, like, linked it up to Apple Music or whatever. I don't really know why it happened, but it did happen. And I have, let me look at my phone right now. Let me look at this phone. I'm pulling up my phone, opening the alarm settings. If I was to just guess at how many alarms I have roughly 50 alarms in my phone. Yeah. None of them are set for days of the week, though. Like, they're all manual alarms that I toggle on and off. Mm-hmm. They range from 12:20 at midnight, mm-hmm. like 12:20 in the middle of the night, mm-hmm. to 6:50 p.m. Why I had to have an alarm set, you know, this is my wake-up alarm. Like, I don't use these unless I'm waking up for something.
Right. That's an afternoon nap alarm, it sounds like.
I don't take those. No. I want to, and I have. But I don't. The mornings are the worst because, you know, we've talked about our retail schedules in the past, but you can see, like, anything after 5:50 a.m. and later, there's every 10 minutes, basically, sometimes every 5 minutes.
Yep.
In increments, I have alarms based on when my shift starts in the morning. Yeah. And then anything before 5:50 is probably an airport alarm that I set once.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, it's a nice little time capsule, your alarms, if you don't manage them, like, bi-weekly day. I wish I had a regular schedule because then I could have, like, you know, 1, 7, 10 alarm for Monday through Wednesday, and then
Well, they have a separate thing for that now called bedtime, don't they?
They do, but I find that way too stressful because it basically just tells you how tired you're going to be in the morning when you don't obey it.
Yeah.
It's just like it's like, oh, if you go to bed right now, you're gonna get like 6 hours of sleep, and I'm like, that's not enough sleep. I need more than that, please.
Yeah. Well, now I'm sad. Now I wish that all my alarms are still there. Like, they're gone. I'm looking at them on my watch. Like, this is the last record I have of them.
And well, you can re-input them again. It's not that hard. You just use
Siri. No, I'm just going to do them over time, you know, as I naturally will need them. But
right.
Yeah.
Right.
I used to use my earliest alarm, which was for like 4:45 a.m. often.
Nice.
Back in the
good
retail
opener.
Days.
Good open and shift there. What time did you be there for? 6 or 7?
I had to be there. I had to be there at 6, but there, towards the end there, we were doing 5 a.m. shifts, so even the ones on my watch aren't even that current, because I definitely had some that woke me up earlier than that.
That sounds bad.
Yeah, it was bad. That's why I quit. But, yeah, so that's what I'm working through this week. It's one of my big things, is I'm resetting
all
my settings.
I'm sorry that it came to that. There was probably an easier way to do it than the nuclear option.
I don't think so. I don't know. Like, it was such a minor bug. It was probably not even worth doing, but I do use that little widget all
we
the
went
time.
Through everything too. Like, I was like, did you delete the accounts that you're stemming from, did you do this, did you do that? I feel like we talked about it a lot. And
yeah, I don't know, it's fine.
Did
it's
you delete
fine.
The widget and add it again? And, yeah, and none
that.
Of those things did it. That's crazy.
No, just a weird little thing.
Did you try turning it off and on again? That's really...
Oh, shit, I should have tried that.
I mean, that's what happens. When you reset all settings, the phone does turn itself off and on again.
No, of course I did that.
That's a crucial step of that.
I have to do that all the time just because I'm on, like, the beta channel for Breaker. So whenever we're testing stuff, sometimes I like to make sure that my settings are all...
Got a fresh start.
Yeah. Hey, how was your Halloween?
Oh, my God, it was so great. I sat inside and... watched what do we watch? I don't even know what we watched. We watched some Jersey Shore, I think.
Oh, that's
or
spooky.
We watched, yeah, it is. It's very, very haunting to see those ghouls on screen.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was chill. I didn't dress up as anything. I didn't go to any Halloween parties over the weekend. This is like a fully non-participatory Halloween for me.
Nice.
Like, it was just the most ignored. Like, I walked in and saw candy in my building's lobby.
Uh-huh.
When I was getting home from work yesterday, or when I was coming back from a walk, and I was like, ooh, candy. And I just took it. It was inside the lobby, so it wasn't for the trick-or-treaters outside.
Yeah.
My building is pretty miserable. There's one lady outside who's very cheerful and nice, but she was handing out candy to some of the trick-or-treaters. But I think she gave up after I walked inside. Like, I walked in with the dog, and she just like, oh, okay, I guess I'm done now, and just comes back in. Like, I saw the most, not lethargic, but just like the most unaffected trick-or-treater. He must have been like 14 years old. I don't think he was dressed up in anything. He's wearing like a light blue, like North Carolina colors, essentially, mm-hmm. hoodie, I couldn't see his face, so he might have been wearing face paint, but probably not, and just walking around with a sack, not saying thank you. Like, I was walking behind him with the dog up my block, and he just kind of, like, walking up, making, like, barely any eye contact with the person handing out candy. And the person handing out candy had, like, a pack of, what's it called, with Stella? They had a six-pack of Stella Artois on the on the sidewalk.
Is that what they're giving out?
And no, I wish. And four boxes of pizza that they're just eating in a big, like, there's, like, seven adults just hanging out outside their building. I'm like, that sounds like fun Halloween plans. And my building is just, you walk over to my building and it's just deserted lady outside, kind of with a witch hat on, just handing out candy.
Aww.
I didn't even think about a costume this year. That's how bad it was.
Yeah. No, I was in the same boat. Like, there wasn't even a reason for me to do it. Like, I was in class until about 9 o'clock. So by the time I got home, May was at her friend's, helping pass out candy to anybody that came, but it also poured in town, so it was kind of a dud.
That'll put a huge damper on Halloween.
Yeah,
I don't remember too many rainy. I remember drizzly Halloweens, but I never had a rainy Halloween, and I thank the Lord for that, because, man, I remember Halloween was so important to me as a kid.
Yeah.
I never had, like, crazy, you know, like, horror stories or anything like that, but just, like, some of the best hangs. It's really, for me, it's when you learned to hang out without adults, because there's a point where your parents trick or treat with you up until, you know, like, they walk you from house to house and wait for you to go up the path. It's like a weird graduation every year. Like, I'm sure when I was really young, my parents would come to the door with me to, like, assist me in walking, and then but then they would stand at the curb, and then eventually they just stopped. I could just wander my town alone at night in a costume.
Wait, you were alone? Like, when I graduated from doing it with my parents, I had to be with friends. Like, that was, like,
with friends, yeah. But I mean, like, it was assumed that I was gonna be with friends. Like, it would be kind of, I'd be the light blue hoodie boy if I was alone. And that kid was weird as hell. Just, he's staggering down the street, not like in character or anything, as a zombie, just staggering down the street, just shuffling, doing, like, a really goofy, like, freshman year of high school, eighth grade maybe, kind of stomp down the street being
that look.
Candy, please.
There's a bunch of students in my building. I think they must be high schoolers. I don't know if it's, like, advanced placement or if they're just using rooms in our college facility because they need the space. Squatters. Or something. But yeah. No, there's just, like, tons of high schoolers that just, like, every time I come into school about 1 o'clock, you know, they're getting out of class or something and waiting for their bus to come, and they're just everywhere, and they're just shuffling, and they're going really slowly down the stairs while FaceTiming. It's like,
no sense of urgency. What, and no, don't they have caps in their cellular data? God, get a life, kids. Save that for Wi-Fi. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No. Well, maybe they are connected to the Wi-Fi, but the stairwells, there's definitely no Wi-Fi in the stairwells. So no, that's a hard no. They're using data for sure.
No Wi-Fi in the stairwells. That's crazy.
No, they don't. They use those, like, I don't know if they're called repeaters. Yeah, I'm not in networking, but, you know, those little things that they hang on the ceiling and they bounce the Wi-Fi signal around. Yeah.
Dang. So no dressing up for you?
No.
In class?
Not this year. No, not at all. I finished finished class and I came home and I did homework. I was a stress student for Halloween this year. No candy either. I haven't had a single piece of candy all month.
That's messed up that you would do that to yourself. Was that intentional?
No. No one's giving me candy. Like, where am I going to get candy? Who's giving me candy? There's nobody giving me candy.
My mom gets only one trick-or-treater a year, usually, and that's just her neighbor. And she still buys a full, like, 3 or 4 bags of candy, and she'll just house an entire bag of candy in one night. Mom, I'm sorry I outed you for that, but just,
she's prepped.
You need to know you have a problem and you have no trick-or-treaters.
Well, that's good though. I mean, that's extra. That's either a lot of candy for that kid next door or a lot of candy for yourself, and there's something wrong
she
with that.
She is the type of lady that would probably be like, "You know what? Just I have plenty of extra, but
here,
I can
just
also
take the
see
bag."
No, she would never give the whole bag. She wants it for herself, but she would probably give him like 3 or 4 pieces. You know, be like, "I don't think we're getting any more trick-or-treaters tonight. You can have some more extra. Take it if you want." And she gets the good candy too. I bet she did like Kit Kats, Reese's.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
What else does she do?
See, I hope that neighbor kid doesn't listen to this podcast. I think it's great if your mom does, but if the neighbor kid does, he's going to be like pissed off. Oh man, she's been ripping me off all these years.
Lady could have given me a whole bag. She had three more inside. God. But like, so your Halloweens, were they
growing up, you mean?
How old were you when you were parentless on Halloween?
That's a good question. I was kind of thinking back on my old Halloweens. I was just trying to think of my old costumes. I'm like, somebody asked me like, what were some of your best costumes growing up? And I was having a hard time thinking of any of them, you know? Like, I made a very, very short list, and that list is episode 1 Obi-Wan Kenobi complete with Jedi braid. And then there was this giant Frankenstein costume that my dad got that I wore in high school. But that accounts for 2 years of the first 17 years of my life. And I have no idea what I did for the rest of them.
I don't know.
I don't know when I went off on my own, but I think it was fairly early because our neighborhood was pretty chill and we had a lot of friends who lived in the area. So it wasn't bad. Mm-hmm.
It was like my mom would drop me off somewhere in the next town over so I could be with my like Ben and the other guys. And I remember one year we did like a haunted house in someone's backyard and you'd like invite neighborhood people to come in the back. And mm-hmm. I don't remember a lot about it, but we set up like a rig where we would kick a trash barrel over and Ben had like a climbing harness on and he would be hanging. He'd have like a fake noose on his neck and it would look like he was being hung. And like we spent, like I must've gotten to that house at like 5 or 6 in the evening. And the haunted house was like, maybe like 8 or something. You know, it couldn't have been that late because of the curfews and stuff. But regardless, we spent a long time getting that rig and it was like the centerpiece of our haunted house, but you mm-hmm. walk by it the first thing. So like it couldn't have been that bad, like, or that intense for anybody experiencing it. And then you like, there's so much weird stuff that we got away with back then. Like then you bring like the trick-or-treaters into like a haunted little like tool shed in the back and mm-hmm. you have like a fortune teller. And then I remember like shaking the house and freaking out the kids on the inside, like things you probably couldn't do now because just like trapping people. Like you wouldn't invite anybody into your backyard now on Halloween, would you? Like
in the backyard? No, is that allowed? You definitely can't. Like the parents would get in an uproar. I remember I knew growing up that I couldn't just go into a house alone. Like I couldn't go into a stranger's house on like trick or treat. And this is a time when like, you know, I'm still trick or treating with my younger sister and my parent, like at least my mom is taking me around. We're probably with like another mom and some of our other friends or something like that. But I remember going to this one house and like we got our, like the two older kids, me and another friend, we got our candy and then we turned around so we could go down the walkway back to the sidewalk and go to the next house. Well, this elderly woman who was giving us the candy, very nice, sweet old lady. I don't even remember the reason why, but she like invited my little sister and her little friend in.
Ooh, that's weird.
Yeah. So we're like walking down and then I see my mom coming in through the gate and then she grabs us and walks us back. And then she's like knocking on the door and she just goes into the house and I'm like, oh my gosh, Sarah, you know, like she didn't know better. She's a lot younger. So I'd say that she was probably like 6 maybe. So she doesn't know. I mean, maybe she should, but yeah, I do recall that because it was kind of scary. Like, even though she was totally nice and she didn't mean any harm, I think she probably just wanted to like show her a picture of her granddaughter she reminded her of, or who knows. But it was kind of a scary situation because my mom freaked out big time.
Yeah, I don't like. I remember the early 90s that like there would be haunted houses that like some people would have like Halloween parties that were kind of just open door in our neighborhood that you could just go into. Maybe I'm just thinking of one in particular, but it was like, you know, just bobbing for apples and whatever and like that kind of thing. I don't know. Just this weird sense of autonomy that you would get on Halloween at a certain age where mm-hmm. you could just wander around. But my towns did have, like the towns that I trick-or-treated in did have curfews. Like I think they were 8 o'clock, you know, you had, like kids had to be inside by that time.
Shortly after
Very
dark.
Wise. And like at the time I was like, oh man, I want to stay up past 8. But like, It totally makes sense because I couldn't have been older than like 12, you know, at those times. And 12-year-olds just should not be wandering around after dark, no matter how safe your neighborhood. Like, there's nothing good you can do after 8 o'clock as a 12-year-old in your neighborhood. There's
right.
No, nothing you can
there's
get into.
There's nothing to do.
For trouble.
You're not just out for a stroll. Like generally, like you're
like,
out
you,
with an
aim. Like, oh, like you're probably you need like what do you need to do in the cover of darkness that you can't do for, from 4 to 8 while you're trick or treating? Like,
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of teepeeing that could happen, the shaving cream, the eggings. I think my house got egged once, but it was indiscriminate because I was too young. Mm-hmm. I was, like, probably 4 or 5, so nobody could egg us with, like, intention at that point, yeah. And, like, shaving cream a lot. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. There, at least our area, like, you know, during Christmas time, there are the houses that go all out with lights. We had a couple houses that
things.
Would... Well, sure. But there were a lot of houses in our area that would go all out for Halloween. So, you know, they'd put crazy lights around the house that made it look all spooky, and then the stuff hanging from the trees and, you know, all the scary stuff. And sometimes those were neighborhoods that weren't necessarily great for trick-or-treating. Like, they weren't the areas we wanted to go to because they didn't have the king-size candy bars or the Pepsi. Like, it wasn't, like, the spot that you definitely wanted to hit for the candy. But then afterward... Yeah, I swear.
Back up for a second.
Haven't I told this story on this podcast already?
I don't remember it, but that may be just because I'm a bad friend.
That could be. The record will show it. There was a guy who lived around the corner from my house who worked for the Pepsi company, and he always had...
I don't remember this.
Oh, well, good. Well, he always had, like, the new limited edition, whatever Pepsi was trying at the time. You know, this is early 2000s, so Pepsi was trying, like, a whole bunch of stuff. They had, like, Pepsi Clear.
Clear Pepsi? Oh,
Pepsi
God.
Pepsi Blue.
Jeez.
You know,
it's
all
like
the Pepsi brand
apples.
Stuff. Yeah. No, well, not at the time. Like, this is new.
Clear
and, like,
Pepsi?
We're kids.
Oh,
we're kids. Who cares? Who cares? So, like, this place handed out cans of Pepsi. It was awesome. It was sweet. And, like, the parents didn't know about it. So, you know, when I was a kid, like, drinking pop was usually a no-no. Like, birthdays, maybe a mocktail at Christmas, but, like, Pepsi products were not a staple in our home. So getting a Pepsi was, like, a big deal. And it, you know, I'd drink it while I was out trick-or-treating because I knew if I got home with it, like, they'd be like, where did you get this?
Yeah, you gotta hide the evidence. You gotta recycle that can in some neighbor's unsuspecting recycle bin.
That's right. Yeah.
My God. I can't think of the weirdest thing I got as a treat on Halloween. Like, maybe a candied apple, you know, like, wrapped up.
Yeah,
with, like,
that was always
ribbon
weird.
Around it.
The homemade treats were always sketchy.
You
we
can't
weren't
do that anymore.
To, yeah, well, we
if,
weren't even allowed to keep
if
them
it was
when
ever
I was
allowed.
Kid. Yeah, we couldn't keep them.
I don't have any memory of my parents taking candy away from me, but I do, Ben of Venetia Fair fame, he did get a tack in his candy that was inserted into one
really?
Of his candy bars. Yeah,
really?
Yeah, it became his AOL screen name when he had to make one tack
okay.
in your candy.
Okay, so he's the reason that we all had to
he's
check
the
our,
one.
Our
yeah,
bars.
He's the one. But it's real. He really did find a tack in his candy, a totally unnatural thing. My mom found wood chips in, like, one of her Kudos bars once at lunch once, though, so you never know. It could just be a manufacturing thing.
Yeah, that'll happen. Like, that's mm-hmm. a thing. But we did grow up during the scare. Like, there was like, the razor blade scare, you know, like...
Well, oh, there was a thing? Like,
yeah,
that
was a big thing.
I remember the razor blade and the Big Mac. I remember seeing that in the news as, like, a 10-year-old or 11-year-old. That was insane.
Yeah, I never, ever had a problem with any of my candy. But, you know, my dad often said that there were things in candy.
There's poison,
that he wanted.
Yeah. Oh, that one's poisonous. The Almond Joys are poisonous. I got to take care of those, son. The only reason to have kids is just to take their Halloween candy and also dishes. Making kids do the dishes is really a life goal of mine. I just remember as a kid, my parents, when I'd have to do the dishes after dinner, I'd be like, you know, whining like a piece of shit kid. And my parents would be like, I'd be like, well, you can't believe you're making me do this. It's like child labor or whatever, you know, like something stupid and annoying. And my parents would be like, yep, that's the reason we had kids, to have someone do our dishes for us. And I took it at face value at the time. But now I see that it does actually have real life value, and I hate doing dishes.
Oh, man.
So,
Have you seen this? I've seen this before, but it popped up again today, you know, like... conservatives talking about how they learned about how the government is taking so much of our money in taxes and stuff, and how they learned the lesson through, like, the distribution of candy during Halloween time.
That's a Donald Trump Jr. thing, isn't it? He tweeted that, like, last year.
Did
wasn't
he?
It?
I don't know. I saw this tweet today. I don't know who this person is, but she said, time for my favorite Halloween story. Every Halloween for my entire childhood after trick-or-treating, my dad would take my brother and me into the dining room table and have us pour all of our candy out in front of us. My dad would then proceed to separate about a third of the candy out and pull it towards himself, saying, "This is for your federal taxes." He slowly did the same in smaller amounts for state and local tax. And like she went on to say, basically, like, you know, I learned this lesson, and I'll never forget this important lesson I learned from my father when I was a kid. And I'm just like, first of all, cruel. Second of all, totally inaccurate. Like, it's not a good metaphor at all. But I see this dumb thing every single year.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I remember
the Donald
this.
Trump Jr. one. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's him trying to explain socialism to his daughter, but then he just got his ass handed to him.
Yeah.
Not that he cared. Or
it's a bad argument because,
his ass,
like,
to him.
Okay, if your dad is pretending that he's the government in this scenario, like, then the government is also giving them housing and paying for all of their food and sending them to school, like paying for literally everything, and the candy, the money that he's taking from them in taxes, like, that was given to them for free by members of the community. So, like, it's just, shit pisses me off.
Just reading this tweet, Donald Trump Jr. is October 31st, 2017, so 1 year ago. He goes, "I'm going to take half of Chloe," his daughter, presumably, "I'm going to take half of Chloe's candy tonight and give it to some kid who sat at home. It's never too early to teach her about socialism." And people are just like, wow, such a bad thing to teach your daughter how to share with, like, people who can't trick-or-treat or whatever, you know?
Right.
Like, and then somebody, the best one, is somebody goes, "My man, socialism was getting her that free candy in the first place. You're taking half a reason she can't. You taking half a reason she can't understand is capitalism." And that is so on the nose and awesome. Like,
yeah.
Socialism is just her being able to get a handout of free candy. Then right. Some obscure person coming in and taking half is capitalism. That's so awesome that he's got.
Boil it all away, and you're just being mean to kids.
Yeah.
Like,
and exploiting
it,
your daughter,
right,
for
yeah.
Everybody on Twitter.
Ugh. God,
man,
please
gross.
Go vote.
Yeah.
Well, this will be out late November, so we'll.
Yeah.
You listening now, you know the answer. You know what happened. God,
I hope
scary.
It went well, everybody.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I set up my ballot today. I got my registration. I think we talked about that.
Yeah.
Possibly in when we talked about the DMV. But I signed up to be a registered voter, and sure enough, my registration confirmation came in. I am officially a New York State licensed voter. So
that's nice. So wait, when did you you submitted that a while ago? Then
I submitted that right before October, beginning of October.
Okay, so yeah. So are you doing the absentee mail in ballot, or are you gonna go?
No,
to the
no,
polls?
I'm gonna go to the polls and vote.
Yeah, me too. I thought about doing the absentee thing because, you know, it's nice to know that you've done it and you've got it out of the way, but I don't trust it with all the things
right.
that I've been hearing, like, especially from
yeah.
Georgia. Like, I want to put it in myself. Like, I want to know that it's
yeah.
there.
I voted absentee in 2016 for Massachusetts when I was still a resident there. And that was fine. But yeah, you never really know if your vote was counted or not, or something weird happened
yeah.
along the way.
I guess you don't know in any scenario, but I feel like it's more
sure.
in my hands when I wake up early
yeah.
and go to
it's like going
to
the going into the window at the post office and handing that in, as opposed to just dropping it in the mail slot outside.
Right.
It's
yeah.
a weird thing. It's a weird thing humans do when they just need visual proof, even though when I walk away, I could do anything with that letter.
Yeah.
Last time I went to a post office, I was mailing an iPhone that I had sold by USPS. And this guy is trying to save me time at the post office, an employee, not just a random guy. He goes, he's like, "Oh, you're just mailing that?" And he grabs my box and he scans it. And I'm like, "Okay." And he goes, "Thanks so much." And he turns to his right and just pitches the iPhone probably about 5 or 6 feet from, you know, shoulder height into a bin that's completely empty.
Oh,
and I just
no.
looked at him like, I just looked at him. I'm like, "You really didn't have to throw that, dude. You have no idea what was in there." And I just walked away because whatever is done at that point. And I got good feedback on eBay, so it's all fine.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, but like this that level of disregard.
Like,
that, like, while the customer's standing in front of you, you can just heave a package.
Right.
Like, usually you wait till they're out of eye line, or, you know, you place to the side and then you throw it when you're loading the truck. But like, the dude did it while I directly was making, like, he had turned while I was still watching him.
Mm-hmm.
As close as I am to this microphone right now, maybe
yeah.
a little farther.
You know it's going to happen, but you never thought you were going to see it while you were still in the post office.
Yeah, such flagrant
usually,
disregard, which I respect the hell out of a good disregard, you know, every once in a while. Like, it's very very intriguing to watch someone disregard in blatant ways.
You already know that they're disregarding, like they're treating packages like that on the truck. So to know that they're doing it in the actual post office itself is so disconcerting.
Hilarious. This is the same time that I tell you about this dude, the shirtless guy.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
This is the same time. I might have even told this pitching story already. I apologize if I did. But yeah, that was the shirtless guy story the same day. The dude pitching my friggin'
He was the one that was angry that the machine wouldn't
take his giant package. Yeah, you're a better friend than me if I forgot your Pepsi story. I'm sorry.
No, I don't think you told it, though. I listened to these shows twice because I have to edit them. And I just edited that one this week. So,
oh, man.
I'm a moderate friend who has to do a little more work on the show than you do. That's all.
I'm a friend because I have to be, is what you're saying. It's part of the job.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Speaking of editing, I've had this, for Good One, the Vulture podcast I'm doing as a reminder, the comedian podcast. Mm-hmm. We've had this episode in the back. It was like the first episode we recorded, but we've just been delaying it, I think, for some release reason. Like there might be something coming out, or everybody else before them had something coming out, so we couldn't delay. Mm-hmm. And, it's for Max Silvestri and his girlfriend, Leah Beckman, his longtime girlfriend. And we recorded a long time ago, and I cut it a long time ago. So even then, it was like a two-hour interview that I cut down to like an hour and 20 minutes, which means I still need to cut another 20 minutes out of it, which I did. So I hack it all down. I get it below an hour, which is the timeline for this podcast has to be an hour or less. And I usually go for 58, 59 minutes. And I get I finally get the voiceovers from Jesse, the host and the senior editor at Vulture. And he's just, and I listen to his voiceovers and I'm cutting up his voiceovers because he does a bunch of takes and then we piece them together. And his voiceover specifically mentions a section of the podcast that I had gotten rid of. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little bit lazy with my versioning. I know like a lot of editors and film editors and everything will save a new project, like a mm-hmm. completely new project with all the same audio files at multiple stages. But at this point, you know, in the podcast, I know the workflow and I know what the revision process is like. And Jesse has never asked me to put something back in before.
Yeah, that's
but
rare.
This time he just happened to reference a section of the interview that I had cut out, and I couldn't cut out his voiceover because like it was just the way it existed. And also be really weird for him to hear it and be like, wait, I definitely said something else and mentioned something else about Leah in that section. But I put it back in. So essentially I just created, because it was a three-person interview, so I created three more tracks in the edit and expanded the cut sections that I had done earlier because I stripped the silence. So I just, you know, imported the audio files again, the raws, mm-hmm. and had to go just digging. I went digging for gold and I found, I had to find the section and then I had to recut it the way I thought I cut it.
Yeah.
And then because I'm adding in four more minutes to the interview, that means I have to cut 4 minutes elsewhere. It was like a weird cascading failure, yeah. But it was, and I resolved it in probably like an hour and a half, 2 hours, but it was just such a pain in the ass.
But yeah, that's what's got me kind of hung up on this other podcasting project that I'm working on for a local company. They've changed some things around and that means that I don't have to edit the podcast down to under 7 minutes, which was a huge problem because the podcast that they recorded was like 45 minutes and cutting that down
what are
to
they,
seven.
What are they expecting?
I know. Like, I don't know.
What are they?
I don't know.
Oh, man.
I talked to Matt.
I'm not asking you to speak bad about your employers here, but like, what are they thinking?
Well, I mean, they had a name that they liked, and it was like 7 minutes and something. And
40 minutes and 7 minutes is what they were going to call it.
It was like, you know, it is something 7 minutes, and which is fine. That's a good concept, but the preparation was too much for that. Like, I could easily cut out a lot of it, but if they wanted most of it in there, like, there had to be a lot of edits. And I was able to do it for most of it. I was able to get pretty close, but I was like, look, this is going to be a lot better if it doesn't have to be this short. And they're like, okay. So it kind of got put on hold for a while, and then they sent me some more assets so I can continue on the project. But at this point, I just need to redo the entire thing. I'm just going to start from scratch because I can't go back and add in 35 minutes. I need to just start over, which is going to be a pain. But I'm a little better with like RX and Logic now, so I think it'll just be a better product overall. But I gotta get going on.
I mean,
that
like the best part about having these projects that like your heart's not fully in, but mm-hmm. your wallet is, like, the workflow. Like when I did the unnamed, the podcast that shall be not be named about food, when I did that, like it was constant just bickering back and forth, not with me, but between the producers and the host, and about what needed to be cut. And the shows, I forget how long, but these episodes must have been like 26 minutes long, and they were handing me 3 hours of interviews. And each one of these interviews, we probably only used 2 minutes tops from each interview, maybe, before the editors would say to the hosts, like, this is too much, this interview is dragging, you know, you got to move this. And, but these, they would do 15, 20 minute interviews just to grab 2 minutes. And I just think it's such a disservice to the people that they're interviewing, especially the people that get called into the studio that take like multiple hours out of their days for like a clip that's only going to be 3 to 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like it just like you definitely in those cases, what I've learned from like This American Life or whatever, or like the way Radiolab does it, is like you send a reporter, you do a tape sync, you know, if you're going to be just using like a small piece. 'Cause like Radiolab, by all means, will take, they'll interview somebody for an hour and use maybe like 4 minutes of that dialogue, but they use dialogue in a different way than this food podcast was doing. But man, it was it was just such a waste of everybody's time, you know. I don't think they realize how long it takes to edit, or like even given a script, I don't think they know how long it takes to excise this the quotes from a script that they're asking for. Mm-hmm. And to like, and also when they just look at the transcripts and pull the quotes, so they wouldn't realize how somebody talks quickly, how when somebody finishes a sentence, they like between the word sentence and they there, there's like not a lot of space. You can't like,
there's no natural cut,
right? There will be like a, if you people string two sentences together without even thinking about it, or people start sentences in the middle of another sentence and it just doesn't sound right. And there's no way you can make that right, no matter what. I think some of the, I forget where I was reading it. Maybe it was like Ira Glass's thing or somebody, you know, it was transom.org. That's a really amazing resource for anybody looking to do podcasting or reporting or audio, whatever. It's transom.org is like the ultimate source on a beginner's guide to whatever. But they were basically, I think there was an article on there about effective interviewing, and they're basically just like, kind of know, like there are certain situations where you're not going to know what you're about to get from the person you're interviewing. But like, if you get to the end of the interview and the podcast or the person you're interviewing hasn't said what you want them to say, or what you're hoping for them to say, or what you need them to say, just ask them to say it, as long as they're not bending the truth. If they haven't phrased it in the way that you're looking to do it, just be like, hey, you mentioned this earlier, can you say it in this way? It's akin to what happens on reality TV, albeit like a little less construed, but like, you know, on reality TV, like Jersey Shore or whatever, like the producers are behind the camera in those confessionals, or not the confessionals, but like in the one-on-one interviews, they're just feeding them lines. They're like, hey, can you say like so-and-so walked into the room and you felt weird? And they're like, okay, so-and-so felt in the room and I felt weird about that. They're like, okay, cool, let's move on. Right. But that's what's happening on reality TV shows fully. And you can kind of do that when you're a journalist, to a certain degree, as long as you're not
stretching the truth. Yeah, well, it depends on the format. And like when you're trying to craft a story, and especially if you're using audio, you've got to be able to do that. You know, on Love and
There's
Radio
and
things like that, you've got to tell them, like, you got to talk in the right tense. That's a big thing.
Right.
Like, someone will...
You can't reflect on it. You can't, in the middle of telling a story about how things were at that time, you can't say, man, I really wish I didn't do that. You can't say that in the middle of telling a story about when you
Well, you
can
at the turn. You can say it at the turn. Like, they can talk how they want to at the turn, but you can't give it away in the first act.
Yeah. Or Love and Radio can edit that into being part of their artsy thing. Man.
Yeah, they do crazy stuff with that. Love and Radio, they're the kings of like making that work. I'm really surprised, because I think something's gonna go one way and then it goes another way. Like I think the white supremacist cis guy, or the hyper conservative, however he talked about himself.
I don't think he identified as white supremacist, okay, but he definitely identified as conservative, like a neoconservative.
Yeah, well, that guy. That one fooled me for a second, because I was totally not expecting what it was.
Yeah, he was talking, I only knew there was something tense, weird happening because you had mentioned how angry you were, and it's only a few things that make you upset. conservatism is one of them.
Yeah.
What was, like, I'm trying to think. I'm constantly impressed by Nick Vander Kolk's, like, disregard for, like, sane audio practices. Like when it comes to his voice, he always sounds like he's recording through his computer's microphone. Have you noticed that? Like, it's always,
yeah, but
like,
it's part of the charm.
It is, and it works completely. It's amazing. But like his, remember what I mentioned like a few minutes ago, how a blatant disregard is very mm-hmm. impressive to me. He just gives zero fucks, and that makes me so happy and so impressed, and I hope he never stops. But like, it does just sound like he's in an empty room recording through his laptop mic sometimes. Yeah. And I mean, I know my mics doesn't sound that great right now. It's like fine, but like you can hear the echoes if you're listening close enough, if the quality's high enough. Like, but it, yeah, I just love that. Like that last week's episode, like a lot of his interview just sounded
it's
like
all phone.
Like,
it's all just on the phone. It's all just for yeah. like phone recorded stuff, and it made it different than all the other yeah. episodes, because the thing about his show is like yeah, a lot of podcasts will record really crappy audio, and that's just what they do every week. He mm-hmm. he does his like intros and outros and his voiceover things on pretty bad, either bad recording equipment, or they're specifically making it sound bad in post. But because they spend so much time on mixing the rest of the episode, it's like, you know that it's intentional. So you know that it's not bad for the sake of being bad. It's like, this is just part of the charm.
It's almost like, I don't know if I, you know what, I'm not versed well enough in the Twilight Zone to know this, but like maybe like Masterpiece Theater or something like that. Mm. It's like, it's a bookend, and it's a really effective bookend. It's like, you know, you start the show with this familiar character introducing the things in a style that you are familiar with as the viewer or listener in this case. And then it moves into something that's completely stylized differently. And that's mm-hmm. what I love about Love and Radio, is that you have those familiar bookends of Nick talking. And then in between, it's something completely different. Like, oh man, what was I thinking of? Shoot, I forgot. I'll come back to me later, but yeah. Oh man. Just some good
I like it.
Stuff.
It was fun. And that latest one was fantastic. Holy cow.
The journal one where like the guy's diary where
yes.
the girlfriend finds it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I feel like we shouldn't spoil it for anybody.
No, I don't want to, but it's so good because, oh, and it's so hard to talk about without spoiling it.
Did it get you? I can say that without it, without
did what get
it,
me the ending
did yeah did like did at the end of it, were you surprised? I guess I'll put it that way.
No, I wasn't surprised, but I just it there were so many layers to that when I was mm. peeling back, like, okay, I don't think this gives away too much, but I'm thinking like, okay, who's in the wrong here? Like who's actually in the wrong here? It got me thinking. I'm like, everybody in the scenario did something crappy, but I think at the end when...
Well, we can be direct about the subject of it, but we don't have to talk about like the spoilers and everything. But essentially, this is a show where the host, Nick, that we've been discussing, talks to someone who called in on his secrets line, which is a hotline he set up where people can just tell their weird secrets, you know, that they feel ashamed about or just want to talk about with an answering machine.
Yeah.
And he picked one of the submissions and reached out to them. And this person was reading her boyfriend's journal that he kept, mm-hmm. like her live-in boyfriend's journal, and kind of seeing that he was criticizing her for things that she was doing. And then she started to actually change in the way that he was asking her to change via the journal. And it spirals from there. But that's the general idea of what we're talking about. And mm-hmm. that won't give anything away that is not, you know... In the episode description says, you know, so-and-so finds so-and-so's journal, hilarity ensues.
It was an interesting enough premise just from that part. Like, just what you explained. Yeah. Like, I thought, okay, that's like, really weird. But it's an invasion of privacy, but it's also kind of sweet in a way. Like, there's a lot to that.
A really good job of making that clear, that it is mm-hmm. that it is out of sweetness. There's never a point. I mean, there come points where you're, like, kind of raising an eyebrow. But for most of it, I was along for the ride and being like, huh, this is a weird thing they figured out.
Uh-huh. But then it gets wild. Like it gets crazy.
Yeah.
And at the end, like I thought about it for the rest of that afternoon because it was just so like, I want to talk about this and be a little spoilery. If you don't like this, just like skip ahead 5 minutes. That's fine.
Yeah.
But
wait, hold on. What are we, Okay, yeah, I guess we'll figure it out later. But yeah, skip ahead however long.
It's a great episode to talk about, but you can't talk about it without spoiling it. Like, there's just no way. I don't really know how to do spoilers on
this
show.
This is an episode that is not raunchy. So like, I could even recommend this episode to my mom. Like, I mean, not our like Love and Radio is usually you can get some raunchy episodes, but this one was particularly tame. So like,
and it's not that long either.
Doesn't yeah.
So no, like, if you haven't heard it, maybe. Go ahead and pause this and just go listen to it. It's, I should probably look up the title of it. You want to look that up while I'm just kind of like explaining it?
Yeah. Hold on.
Okay. So yeah, this girl is, she's reading her boyfriend's diary, which is weird. And it's like, it is an invasion of privacy, but at the same time, like, she's doing things that she believes are going to improve their relationship. Things that would probably be okay if she didn't, but she's doing it because she wants to do like a nice thing for her boyfriend, which is nice on the face of it. But then Nick starts talking to the boyfriend also. And so he starts talking to this couple completely independent of one another. And it blows my mind that these two people aren't like talking to each other about what they're talking about with Nick. Like, that this is just going on in the background and neither of them know. Like, I think that part is like kind of crazy to think about. But then when the boyfriend like figures out that she's reading his diary and making changes based on that, he fucks with her. Like, it's, he becomes a like a sociology experiment. I think it's really fucked up. But
he's doing it for the purposes of his relationship too. Like, he wants to, he eventually is like, well, if this is the type of person I'm gonna be with, then
yeah. But it's like, really, it starts getting like really extreme, the things that he's doing. Like, he knows there's a possibility that she's gonna do it, and if she does it, yeah, maybe that's not the kind of person he wants to be with. But what does that say about him in like effectively making her do this thing? Like, she has her own choice, she has her own free will, but if she loves him enough to do these crazy things, like, that means something. And it's kind of, it's weird on him to do that. Like, I thought that was pretty fucked up. But then it flips again. And then she knows that he knows, and she's going along with it.
This episode is called Points of Egress, and it aired originally on October 28th. Chime in with that.
And she starts going along with it, and then she's doing this crazy shit. And so I'm thinking, okay, like, this went from, like, there was a point in this episode where I'm thinking, like, okay, it seems to be working. Like, it's really weird and really unconventional, but they're both aware of the situation, and it's kind of just like leaving little secret tips around on how to improve things. And I'm like, in a way, I can see the benefit to this. It's kind of nice. But then it flips so quickly, and I'm thinking, wow, like, this relationship is just completely fucked. It's completely fucked. And then at the end of it, they blame Nick.
They both do, yeah.
They both blame Nick, and they're brought together. Their relationship is, as far as we know, made stronger because they've gone through this thing where they're both doing terrible things to one another. And I'm sure they recognize this, and it's the reason Nick put this out. So they, inevitably they're going to listen to this probably, and they're going to realize, like, okay, that what you were doing is pretty fucked up. What you were doing is pretty fucked up. And we just blamed it on this guy who is just kind of like listening to what both of you had to say about your really fucked up relationship. It's crazy. I mean, Nick is, yeah, in a way he's exploiting them for his radio show, but at the same time, like, she's getting mad at him for not telling her that he knows when she specifically asked him to do the same thing the opposite direction. Like, it's this episode is full of hypocrisy, and at the end of it, I'm just like, wow. It was a crazy turn. Like, I just didn't imagine that it was going to end with them uniting against the interviewer of the podcast. So crazy.
Right? I wish, yeah. Okay, so, but at what point did you realize it was all fake, though?
You think it's fake?
It is full. He says it was performed by these people.
Oh, did he?
Oh my God, Jacob, you totally missed it.
Was that at the end?
Yeah, that's why I didn't want to spoil it.
Are you fucking serious? Because I stopped it. Like, I was listening to it while I was in class. I had, like, I was just, like, hunkered down with my, like, hood up around my ears so I could finish it during class. And as soon as, like, I heard him start talking.
Math class, Jacob.
No, it was C++. So I'm, like, typing away. And as soon as I heard him start doing his little outro, I'm like, okay, shutting that down. I didn't hear the ending at all. Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God. That's why you're talking so earnest about it. I'm like, and I'm waiting for you to be like, and then I realized it wasn't real. But
wait.
Like, yeah, no, it's not. It wasn't real.
Ah, man, I've been duped. I was totally convinced.
Yeah, it was so good. It was so good. It was based on like another piece from another show. I forget what it was.
See, fuck this show. It's one of my favorite podcasts, but I don't know when things are real and when they're not real.
That's the problem, but I think they do a Halloween thing every year. I feel like they do. They've had fake shows before. Do you remember?
Shit.
They did the one with the what was it? Was something to do with like a sex caller line or something like that? Like she was just calling up a guy, basically.
Oh yeah,
at random and like
I remember that. It was a year or two ago.
Yeah, but I think I don't know for sure that he bases it around Halloween, but like it was supposed to be a spooky story, like kind of like urban legend type thing. And I think the timing for the week of Halloween was not a coincidence.
Well, but yeah, at shit. The end, now I feel credits, like a fucking goes, idiot.
Well, no, I think it speaks to the effectiveness of the show. So I think anybody listening to this now, who's if you made it to the right spot in the spoilers, like you know. Like, yeah, this is how effective this show is. This is how effective Love and Radio is. But
of the handful of people that listen to this program, two of them actually stopped, listened to that entire thing, came back, and just listened to me talk for 5 minutes about a podcast they know is fake, and I just look like a complete moron.
It's funny. You have control. You can edit this out. But it's so good. Also, as another side note, Love and Radio tweeted a day ago that this is just your annual reminder that candy corn is garbage, and if you like it, you are no longer allowed to listen to our podcast, so am no longer allowed to listen to fucking Love and Radio. I'm sorry. I like candy corn, man.
I'm in the same boat. It's one of my favorite things.
I know. Does that mean we suck, though, and we can't listen to Love and Radio? I think it might.
You know what? Love and Radio is trying to piss me off. First, they have the nationalist guy, and then this candy corn thing, and now they're fooling me with these really good podcasts. I don't know.
I basically started realizing it about that episode. As soon as he was calling her back, and like there's a little like weird like the people who call up the secrets line are kind of coy to begin with. I feel like they're deliberately playing like weird for the thing, or they just are weird.
Or those are the ones that are picked. A lot of people call that number.
Right. Yeah, but then this person that he that he reached out to, supposedly from a secrets line.
Mm-hmm.
When he called her back, she's like, "Well, I definitely gave you my phone number and asked you to call me back. So I guess, here you are." Like it was a little too dramatic
though.
For me, but at the same, but it didn't have me until the final challenges that the guy was putting. Like as soon as he started being like, "Well, I'm doing this," I started getting it when she kept going along with it.
Mm.
Like the water gag.
Yeah,
like that was like, but they did such a good job writing it though, and the actors, I have to say, like making Max, like I think he sounded German, something like that. Yeah, he making him not like an like American, like obviously American, making her like I just thought it was so good. It was like better than any fiction podcast that I've ever listened
to.
Well,
now that you're saying that, I'm thinking why doesn't Panoply get people this good for their like radio shows? They they're doing like The Message and Life After, and why can't they get people this good?
I think a lot of like Life After is fine, but I think it's all in the writing, honestly. If you have somebody writing that has like a clear vision and has a production team, like I don't think Love and Radio's production team is like that crazy. He has like a few producers that's and a bunch of people that submit, but I think he has final call on a lot of this stuff. And man, it was just so well crafted and well acted, and yeah, they had me for a long time. Like it's definitely smelled funny when it started, and then by the end,
wow,
it was just yeah.
I can't believe I got duped, but it's cool though. It's one of my favorite episodes of a podcast in a while. It really had me going.
Well, that's like think about going back to your complaint about it. I don't know what to trust about this show anymore. That's a legit complaint about other podcasts, like like to keep on, Love and Radio's on Radiotopia, that network, and the collective, the Radiotopia collective. And another feed on that network is Showcase, which is basically just any like 6 episodes of a podcast that does something. And what was the you might have heard about this one, what was it, Showcase, the Polybius conspiracy? Do you remember that one at all?
No, you may have told me about it. I haven't listened to anything on Showcase.
It's the Polybius conspiracy, and I don't think it's bad to spoil this at all, because it was a point of controversy for Radiotopia. Maybe not a huge controversy, but it was for the listeners. Basically, Radiotopia has never done a fiction podcast as far as I can determine, and they put this podcast out about this like phantom video game machine that was like a conspiracy, and it was actually pretty well acted. But after the second or third episode, I think maybe in the middle of episode two, I was like, this dude's just like a little too far out there, and this is too big a story to be kept as like some local thing. Mm-hmm. And so I googled it, and then someone was just like, I think the headline on Vice or Wired or something, or Paste or something, was like, the Polybius conspiracy is a compelling, amazingly researched conspiracy theory. It's full stop. It's mm-hmm. also fake. And people like were responding to Radiotopia on Twitter being like, listen, like Showcase Feed has never been fiction before. And like your listeners are getting really into this podcast and, you know, investing into this and going into it with a mindset. There's nothing dangerous about it, so I don't really know where the anger can come from or like the disappointment, but it's just like, it's like anything else, you know. It's like Drew Toothpaste on Twitter when he posts like the weird Donald Trump papers that actually aren't real, mm-hmm. about, you know, like weird potty humor, and news organizations pick it up. But it's just, yeah, like it kind of betrayed a lot of people's trust. And it might have, like, on a lighter note, it might have taught people to listen a little bit more deliberately and skeptically, which is always a good thing when you're ingesting like any type of media. But yeah, I mean, when we talk about like fictional podcasts, I think that's the first thing that comes to mind is the Polybius conspiracy, because it was really cool and I wanted it to be true. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt like a real Mulder, like I want to believe, but but Scully, my inner Scully, always wins out in the end, I think.
That show reminded, just the basic concept of that kind of reminded me of Rabbits. Did you listen to that one?
Is that a, what is
it? It was from PRA. It was very similar. It's just kind of based on like this underground game that you know people play and they get obsessed with, and it involves like, you know, like old video game machines and just, it's just like a mystery of this person trying to find their friend who started mm-hmm. playing this game. Yeah, it was kind of interesting. I fell off of it after a little while. It just got like a little too crazy, but it reminds me of that. But I don't know. I can see like having felt duped now by Love and Radio, like I guess if Showcase was a showcase of shows that were real in nature and content, then to find out that something on that thing was fake would be a little disconcerting, because at that point it's like, okay, well, was the rest or the other shows, you know,
it's more in
fabricated?
How it's presented, I think. Because like they really present it as a documentary, and they do interviews, and it appears to be very well researched, and but I think there are other shows like the show Earthing, I forget what the name of the host is, that was another show that was featured for a few episodes, and there's a whole section of that show that just is like a narrative piece about a bunch of Stephen King characters meeting together in a room, you know, where all these characters go. There's a lot more to it, but I don't really feel like I can describe it well enough. But yeah, I mean, but going into that, you're hearing actors and it's fantastical, and you have like a Stephen King imposter coming in at one point. So, you know, very clearly it is not real. And going into it, you know, the person who's introing it also says it's like a thing he wrote, you know, so it's not like it's a mystery that it's a fake thing. But like to go into it presenting it as a real thing, it's like imagine if someone said Limetown was real, which is back as of yesterday.
I know. I can't decide if I want to start listening to it just yet.
I need to go back to the recap, because I forget everything.
The recap is not very good.
Well, and the trailer for this season of Limetown was just not helpful at all.
I just forgot everything that happened.
Right. I mean, they can't build suspense. The program's been gone for what, 3 years?
It's crazy, but yeah.
Yeah, I think it's been almost 3 years, I feel like. Well, I was in my last apartment when I was listening to it, so maybe 2 years.
It's been a while.
But that's still a long time to be away, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And to come out of nowhere and be like, get ready for all this crazy stuff happening.
Yeah, there's a ton of stuff happening. Like, it's,
I don't know if any listeners have ever watched Mad Men before, but the joke was at the end of Mad Men, during the credits, AMC would air this thing called Next Week on Mad Men. And it would just be a bunch of clips of people being like, yes, no, this, that, and like just saying things that have no plot spoilers at all, just reaction shots and one sentence or one word pieces of dialogue, and it gave nothing away about the plot. You had no idea it was coming next week. And that's kind of like what the preview for Limetown was. Like, it was just like a whole bunch of like dramatic things and people being like, but this is that and this is that. and then the end of it, they're like, where is so-and-so? And
you're like, who?
And I had to rack my brain. Is that the person who was kind of like kidnapped at the end of the last season?
I thought that was the main character. Like, that's
right,
the thing.
The investigative reporter, Leah. I guess that's Leah. Yeah. So, but you know, I don't know what if there's a time jump. Like, is she some mythical character now that was captured in season one? Mm. Like,
there's
a confusing show.
A lot of context that's been lost over time. Like, I need to listen to the first season again. I don't think it'll take that long.
I can't give it that time. It will take long. Ugh. It's like, I think it was like 20 minutes an episode.
That's not that bad.
Like probably 10 episodes. My podcast feed is like, I've fully
failed. I'm sorry,
failed
20
this.
Minutes an episode, and there's how many episodes? 10 episodes? That's 2 hours? Yeah.
It's 200 minutes.
200, okay, 200 minutes. That's, okay, come on, man. That's not that bad. Listen to
that's
2x speed.
Hours. You can't.
It's 100 minutes. It's an hour and a half.
With fiction podcasts, I never listen to a fictional podcast at 2x speed.
1.5 then.
You can't get away with it.
I'm gonna re-listen to it. I gave up on, I keep deleting the episodes of the Wolverine podcast that come into my feed because I haven't even started it yet. I started.
Oh, that's good. That's so good because the guy, the engineer for that show, committed to binaural sound. You know, like he recorded it with binaural mics. So
yeah, but I listen to it in my bathroom when I'm taking a shower. So I'm gonna get
that's
into
something
that
the engineers really don't factor in. Is like the most people are going to be listening to this on shitty ear pods on mono like mono wireless speakers or through their shower speaker.
That'd
be so bad.
I'm looking forward to getting into that and then possibly reading the book and then maybe watching the TV show when that comes out, because podcasts as TV shows are now a thing.
Homecoming is getting its, I think it's the finishing touches. If it's coming out this month, right, or something,
sometime soon. I should probably know. They're plugging it pretty hard on startup. And
Gimlet startup is now doing kind of like a behind the scenes in the making of the television program. And
which is
actually
cool. A little bit lazy, but kind of cool.
Yeah, I had fully written off the Homecoming TV show completely. Like, just being like, oh, well, I've listened to the podcast and I've heard the audio form. How can they top, you know, Catherine Keener and Oscar Isaac and
the
other
Gethard
team like on there? Yeah, well, yeah, he's in the Wolverine podcast too.
Of course he is.
I wish I had talked to him about that when I saw him, but he was, but then they mentioned in episode 2 of the season startup where they talked about, I think his name's Eli Horowitz, who wrote the original Homecoming, the podcast, and how he had to convert that to TV and like the head banging that goes into it. It's a very how the sausage is made kind of thing. And, you basically see one scene from the podcast and then they're like, well, this is why this won't work on TV. Here's why. Because we can't like get an airport. You know, like we picture this in LAX, in a crowded LAX, and all we can get is this rinky dink. Like, I think it was John Wayne Airport and outside of LA. It's like a little regional airport. And they're like, that won't convey like the crowded nature of this character's scene. So like, we can get one shot at a gate at this regional airport. So we need to figure out something that's going on. They're like, well, let's transfer. Instead of having a two-sided conversation where we're going back and forth between these two people in their respective locations, what if we hung on one character in her location for the entire time and gave a tour of the entire set that we're constructing? And they did that. And that's what it ends up being. And that, to me, actually, like the narrative choices that they're making with this show is making me want to watch it more. Like, I was just planning on fully disengaging from it and not watching it, but
I'm
but
worried
that means startup is serving its purpose. I think
I'm worried that it's going to be interesting to the fans of the podcast for that reason, especially being able to hear about the behind the scenes and, you know, especially in cases like that where, they have to do something a little bit different to make it work for TV. I think that'll be interesting to people like you and I who are fans, but for people that are just maybe picking up on the show because they saw it advertised on, is this Amazon or is this on TV?
Amazon, yeah.
Okay.
It's an
so
Amazon thing.
People that just start watching this, like, they're not going to get that. Like, that scene is just going to be somebody talking to somebody on the phone while walking through the building, which is fine, and it's probably going to be okay. Like, they don't know any different, but it's not going to be as interesting for them because they didn't know what that scene was like for the podcast.
That's definitely how I envisioned it when I listened to the show and heard that there was going to be a TV show based on it, because I think one thing the show fails at is creating like a united atmosphere, or just like a uniform atmosphere where, you know, like it's kind of like watching Logan versus like one of the X-Men movies. I feel like Logan has just this look, and like, you know, where it's set and where it's supposed to be. Some of the other X-Men movies though, like I'm not speaking of like Days of Future Past and like Apocalypse. Those are like very clear. It's like clearly 80s and 90s films because of like they time travel to those locations and whatever. But like the early X-Men films are just kind of like, you know, it's like the present day. This jet can fly. These people have powers, and everything else is pretty much the same. There's no like futuristic technology or no really clear government takeover. Like, just these mutants are existing. Mm-hmm. But like Logan is very much like post-apocalyptic. There is some really like it's dusty. It's, you know, they did the whole thing in black and white, you know, as a bonus thing. And right. With Homecoming, listening to this podcast, you know, like some of it's done in like audio recording, some of it's done over phone calls, some of it's done in person, some of it's done like a diner. It's just so many different locations. And the second season was like, some of it's done like open fields and, you know, breaking into places. And like, it's just like, oh man, it's just, I just couldn't see it as a TV show. And when they described this scene as it translates to the TV show, like it has a vision now. I feel like it has this like seedy feel to it, and I haven't seen a still from it yet. I haven't seen a preview for it or anything, so I could be totally wrong about this, but just the way they're describing the way they went about writing this thing for TV now is just the fact that they're revising scenes and making things not the same. They're adding aspects in for the show, you know, like fleshing out the ideas behind it that I thought really, like, the most interesting parts of that show were not the characters. Like, Catherine Keener's character was not like the most interesting part of it, and I think that's what they wanted out of the podcast. They wanted these characters to, their dialogue to carry the whole thing, but it just wasn't. Like, the sci-fi element behind these things, not these soldier stories, not these soldiers like kind of in hiding or whatever, or like her, you know, guilt or whatever, her internal conflict, that wasn't interesting to me. Like, the sci-fi element was, that's what the podcast lacked, but I think that's what they're focusing on, is like kind of giving it a hook, some weird element. Yeah.
It's going to be weird. I think it could be an interesting experiment. Obviously, like, this is like really the first podcast turned television show, like narrative wise. Like, there's Alex Inc., which I don't really count because it's basically just kind of like a paraphrase of,
did you hear the heavyweight story? The live heavyweight episode?
Yeah, I did.
Jonathan Goldstein just ragging on Alex Inc.
Yeah, well, actually, it's kind of interesting in the startup feed too. He Alex explained at the beginning of the episode about his experience with Alex Inc. and how basically like Gimlet wasn't even involved. I didn't really know how that came about, so it was kind of interesting to hear that. But there's this, and then Limetown's got its own show coming out, so podcast,
oh,
TV. Yeah.
Shoot, I didn't know that about Limetown. That's probably why it was away for so long.
Maybe. I don't. Well, he was also writing, they're writing the book, and then they're also working on that documentary series with Crooked Media.
Had no idea about that.
But yeah, they've got big names on these podcast shows. Like, you know, they've got Julia Roberts in Homecoming, and then Jessica Biel is attached to play Leah Haddock in Limetown.
That's an apt cast. That's good. That's a good casting for that. Julia Roberts is too nice. She's too nice to be this lady. Catherine Keener.
Is Jessica Biel? She was in the Sinner TV show, wasn't she? Wasn't that show like doing really well?
Maybe. I don't know. I watched Jersey Shore, dude. That's really.
Yeah, that's pretty fucked up.
That's pretty much it. Oh man, it's great.
Right. Oh, so yeah, I told you about this morning, but I got clever last night. I was a little bored. And I decided to create a script that would allow me to make the episode artwork for this podcast a little faster, which means, it opens, like, I open up the PSD file for the artwork where there is a text layer that says 001, and then I can run the script through Photoshop that asks me what episode I want to start at and how many episodes I want the artwork for, and it just goes in, edits the text layer to the text that I want, exports it, and does that in a loop for all the episodes that I need done, and puts it all into a little folder. I don't know how much time it saves me per artwork. Probably maybe like 25 to 30 seconds once I have
the
thing open.
This reminds me of an XKCD comic.
Yeah. And it took me about 2 hours to get it working right. And there are still bugs, but the bug only works if you start at a digit under 10 and then continue it through 10. I've got the loops messed up for that. But but it's fine because we're past episode 10 now, so everything I do is going to be 2 digits until we get to 100, and then I'll worry about it later.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, that's done. But it kind of excited me a little bit. I didn't know that you could run JavaScript through Photoshop like that.
That's cool as hell.
I spend a lot of time on this task. I should write a program automating it.
you're narrating. Yeah, you're narrating this.
Exactly. Yep. This is basically it. You take forever writing the code, and then that's it. That's exactly it. Yeah, it's fun though. I mean, it's cool. Like I found like a sample script for something similar online, because using the JavaScript through Photoshop is kind of interesting. Like the logic is all fine. It's all JavaScript, which is not really a super complex programming language. But when you're hooking into a program like this, you have to know these like specific, variables or handlers that hook into the export functions in Photoshop. So it's like PNG out dot whatever the attribute is that you want to change. But there's not like, I haven't been able to find a good list of these attributes. So the ones that I needed to change, like I had to go digging around in like other scripts that I found online to find the ones that I needed and put it all together. And eventually I kind of hacked it together, but it was cool. Being a programming student now, like I'm able to open up scripts like this and understand what's going on and not feel daunted. Like it's cool to be able to just start doing the stuff that might make my life easier, but more than anything just scratches that itch.
Well, it scratches the itch and gives you practice, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's good practice. I'm not doing any JavaScript. I guess I'm doing a little bit of JavaScript in school, but,
that's why I'm kind of thankful. Like as annoying as it is to get like audio files that suck sometimes from people, like in the middle of Jesse's voiceover last week, he's saying the word please and like some weird artifact pops in. It's like on top of the word please. I'm like, all right, let's see what we can do with this in RX. But like, yeah, it gives you
an excuse to use that really expensive software you just bought.
Yeah, exactly. And that gives you, and this, you know, script gives you a chance to like flex your whatever skills you're developing.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a good time. And this leads me into something that I know you're not going to want to talk to me about this, but I really need your help.
Okay.
Okay, the other day, Apple Computers had an event.
Oh, no.
And they announced a bunch of really cool stuff. And I need your advice, Mike. What would I get? If I had the money to spend, which I don't, hopefully...
I don't know.
The government
helps
me out with some financial aid this semester,
don't
but
buy anything ever.
I need a computer. I need a laptop. Like I have this amazing iMac that I can use at my desk. But
buy the old MacBook Air.
The old one?
Yeah.
Why?
It's got all the ports you need.
So does this new one?
You're a student. You can get it for $850. You don't want a slot, like a, what is it, SD card slot?
No, I don't
on your
need
computer.
That. I don't need that at all.
You don't want USB-A on your computer?
No. Okay, seriously though, they put out these new MacBook Airs. They're beautiful little machines. And as far as I can see, they're in every way better than the MacBook, and they're less expensive. Why does this exist? Why didn't they just like release this as the new MacBook? I don't get it.
No clue.
Should I get one of these? Like if my financial aid comes through and I get a decent chunk this year, should I get a MacBook Air?
I don't know, dude. They're brand new.
I know.
I'm not an early adopter unless it costs me literally nothing, you know? But like, yeah, I'm super skeptical of anything that comes out that's not like form factor, you know, version 3. You know, like it's a revision. I love revisions.
This isn't like great. A huge difference like from like their other computers though. Like this is more or less like the old Air, but with the basically the internals of the MacBook.
Who knows, dude? I don't know. All right. I was looking at the Mac Mini. The Mac Mini is definitely, it's enticing, man.
Okay, why do you want that? Why get that instead of an iMac?
Because, well, first of all, I haven't read anything yet. I haven't seen a teardown because it doesn't exist.
That's
really
fine.
Like
in general, like when I think Mac Mini, I'm thinking, okay, outdated device that you can get on the cheap that you can use
First of all, it's not cheap anymore.
Well, no, but they have new ones now. But like when I've thought about Mac Minis historically,
because I don't
that are
need a GPU.
Them, okay.
Because like I'm not doing crazy graphics or whatever. Like the big reason that people get iMacs are for video editing, because those screens are like 27 inches
they
are nice looking. Yeah, they are. This one I'm looking at Aaron's right now that I'm not allowed to edit on. and it's so big. It's right next to me on this freaking desk, and I hate it because it's so nice. But yeah, I just like, I have like this desire because essentially I don't need anything graphical on my computer. I use Logic and I use RX, and I'm sure like there's other plugins, but those plugins are not graphic intensive. Mm-hmm. I'm not rendering video. I mean, maybe someday I'll need to use Pro Tools and do dialogue editing, but I don't think I need a crazy graphics card for that. So yeah, like it's basically just, you know, I have a keyboard, I have a trackpad, and I have a mouse. I have a stand. All I need is a monitor on the cheap, and like you can come across like an old Thunderbolt display pretty cheap. You can find a decent 4K monitor for under $500. So mm-hmm. like, you know, like the iMac is great for all in one. The thing I'm torn on is well, I want to see if they refresh the iMac this year, which it doesn't look like they're going to do. But I'm really hoping that, I mean, with iMacs, you have 4 RAM slots, and you can, I think, go up to like 64 gigs of RAM, right? That's on the Mini too right now?
Yeah, you can do that on the Mini as well.
64. But it'd be 2 sticks of 32 as opposed to 4 sticks of 16. You know, and like with the Mac, with the iMac, you have 4 RAM slots. With the Mac Mini, you have 2, like laptop.
Mm-hmm.
So dim. Like, it's just, it's a complicated thing, you know, like to decide whether you want to, like, I just need a Mac OS that's really good and is future-proofing, essentially. It's really going to depend on if the RAM is removable or not, I think, for the Mac Mini, which it looks like it is. They made a point to mention that it's so dim, so, like, that's removable RAM. I mean, the RAM was soldered onto the board for the 2014 Mac Minis, so, mm-hmm. like, that was a huge downer for a lot of people who bought it 8 gigabytes and just planning on an upgrading later and then realized, like, oh, whoa, this is what I get? Dang. But they're good value. Like, it's, I mean, for a Mac OS, speaking relative to Mac, it's, you know, it's a good value.
You'd probably max out the RAM on this thing, right?
I would not. No. I mean, right now I'm using, I would order it with 16
okay.
gigs of RAM, I think. The thing to consider, though, is on an iMac, if you order 16 gigs of RAM, this is why an iMac is more favorable to me still, is that iMac, you order with a configuration of 16 gigabytes, you'll get 2 sticks of 8 gigabyte RAM, in which case you can add 2 more sticks of 8 gigabyte RAM for a grand total of 32 gigabytes of RAM. Mm-hmm. But the Mac Mini, you order it at 16 gigabytes of RAM. That means you'll end up, if you want to upgrade later, then you're going to need to buy 2 sticks of 16 gigabytes of RAM versus 2 sticks of 8 gigabytes of RAM that
right.
ships with the computer. So like you only have 2 DIMM slots. So like, so for the iMac, like from an upgradable perspective, like, I don't know. It's a little bit of like being penny wise and pound foolish, though. You know, like you shouldn't base your computer on the amount of RAM that you might be able to add and save like a couple hundred dollars. You should buy a machine that's going to last and meet your needs,
mm-hmm.
and kind of just shell out. I don't know. Like it's like little things. It's the little details and the RAM.
It is little things, but it's also a difference of $400 between 16 and 32 to start. So,
right. I mean, looking at my, I'm on my MacBook Pro early 2013 right now, looking at my RAM usage, I have a 16 gigabyte configuration. I got the max when I could, when I got this one, and I'm using, with Logic recording, one track of audio. Messages is open right now, and whatever, the Discord app is open. I'm using 6.62 gigabytes of RAM.
Mm-hmm. How many gigs do you have on your, like, physical memory?
I have 16 total, okay. And I'm using 6.6.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm about on par with what's being used, but I only have 8.
You only have 8 gigabytes of RAM.
That's right.
Well, that's the thing, is, like, your system is going to use as much as it can. Like, yeah. If you have, like, 64 gigabytes of RAM, your computer is going to use as much RAM as it can possibly do. You may not have enough tasks to do it, but hopefully you didn't buy a 64 gigabyte RAM computer with only, you know, 8 gigabytes of RAM needed to be used on there. Like, I feel like you have to have a reason to have that much RAM on your computer.
Yeah. I think when we were trying to figure out what I needed for this thing when I bought it, I think the idea was, for the time being, up the processor and then see how the memory works out, because you can always add,
because the RAM is, yeah, you can always work on the RAM later. And, like, you have two sticks, you have an 8 gigabytes, so you have 2 sticks of 4. You could buy 2 more sticks of 4 for probably $150 or less, depending on where you shop at that at. And,
can you mix and match? Yeah. Can you do 2 sticks of 4 and 2 sticks of 16?
You can. They say don't. And I say they say, I mean, just, you know, like, pass down through computer forums or whatever. But, like, from what I understand, you know, somebody who comes in, I've seen users before with, like, 4 gigabytes and 2 gigabytes, like a stick of 2 and a stick of 4 in their computer. And, like, the gains that they're getting from, you know, 4 to 2, like 4 and 2 sticks, beats just having 4 gigs of RAM total. Like, I don't really know too much about that stuff. It's, like, over my head. But, like, yeah, I just think that, like, you could probably do whatever you want to do. And if you start seeing weird things, just have your old RAM around so you can go back.
Yeah.
That's kind of how my perspective is. Just, like, don't do things you can't undo. Like, don't sell your RAM.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I want a little MacBook again. It's, my old one is just shot, and I want
the adorable.
Yeah, do you?
I do. I like it. I want one just to hang out in my living room. I just want it to just chill.
Why not get one of the Airs, though? Like, they're cheaper and they're better.
Because it's not as adorable.
It's barely bigger.
I like taking a situation in my life and finding exactly the application I need. Like, take the iPad Pro, for example. The one they just announced.
Beautiful machine.
The thing is, it is really looking nice. And I look at the price tag and I'm like, do I really need to spend this much money to have the most beautiful comic reading experience of my life?
I know.
The answer to that question is yes. The answer is fully... yes, I am absolutely going to spend way too much money on a comic book reader machine with the ability to use an Apple Pencil. You know, like, I'll definitely take that if I can get it, but, like, so stupid.
The iPad is an amazing keynote device. Like, it's like the crown jewel of their keynotes, because the videos are amazing. Like, it's a beautiful device. Every time they make an upgrade to it, it's like, oh my God, I need one of those. But then when I'm thinking about practical applications, I come down to what you think, and you land on that a little differently. Like, you think, like, this is an amazing device that I could use to maybe draw some pictures and mostly just read comic books. I'm thinking that's all I would use it for, which means it's not worth it. What I really want is something I can do real work on, which is a computer. And
I think you have to make the commitment to do real work on it.
No, like, you certainly do. I know people do. Like, I know that there are plenty of people who do a ton of really, really great, amazing work on iPads. In fact, you can edit podcasts on iPads, and people do it very quickly and it sounds great, but I would prefer to do it on a computer with a mouse and RX and all of the other things that I know how to do.
Right.
And, like, well, I want to be able to do it all.
User. Like, yeah. Whether or not, like, you feel pro in yourself, you use pro tools, not pro tools like Avid, but like, you use professional tools. Yeah. That are made. It's like using Final Cut. Like, there's not a Final Cut right now for iPad. Is Premiere? I know Photoshop is coming to iPad, but I don't know if, like, the whole suite.
Don't even get me started on that demo. But
yeah,
No, really I don't. Good. I don't think Adobe's bringing everything over in a pro right. way, but they're.
But that's the that was Apple's vision. I feel like you know years ago it was like, yeah. Oh, we want to start bringing pros over to the app. And like when users will ask me, they'll be like, hey, like what Mac do you recommend I buy? And I'm like, have you considered an iPad? You know, like what's the cheapest Mac is usually the question. You know, somebody will ask me, family or whatever, and I'll be like, just get an iPad. Like if you're asking what the cheapest Mac is, you're asking me. What is the least amount of money you can spend to check your email and browse the web and watch YouTube, which you definitely, definitely don't need a Mac to do that. Like, absolutely right. not. You can spend $330 on that basic iPad and you'd be happier than you would spending $1,200 on a MacBook. You know, like, it's just, it's fully just like this weird security blanket of an OS that people gravitate to.
Yeah.
And
I'm in that camp. Like I love the look of that machine. Honestly, like if they don't update the iPhones to look like a smaller version of that next year, I'm going to be super disappointed.
They'd be stupid not to. If they don't get rid of the US, if it, like lightning on the iPhone XS is my least favorite part about the whole thing. I can't believe they didn't go to USB-C this year. This was the year to do it, you know.
Next year, all the devices. I think this is a clear sign. Like, if they're doing USB-C on these new iPads next year, they're definitely going to do it on the phones, and hopefully,
what a weird the thing. Like, 2016 is when they made the switch to USB-C and all the MacBook Pros. So, like, what is like? It's been such a weird 2.5 years mm-hmm. of transition. Like, you could call the getting rid of the headphone jack on the iPhone like the year before, you could call that like kind of the beginning, mm-hmm. but that wasn't like, that was a complaint for a different reason. That was like, that affected the majority of users mm-hmm. and didn't really have an effect in the Mac sphere. Besides the fact that like you weren't getting headphones with a little, well, actually you still got the headphones with the iPhone 7. The iPhone 7 came with a little adapter.
To go onto the I still use them every day. I'm always afraid I'm going to lose this damn thing. The replacement adapters are so expensive.
$9? Yikes, buddy.
For a 2-inch cord?
Dude, I get it, but you spent like $800 on the phone.
I just paid it off.
Right, congrats. Let's cough up $10 for that adapter. What's $10 more, buddy?
No, I'm good, but yeah. So
my point is that like, what, like, would as a company, I guess they probably would have risked alienating their entire like customer base immediately and pissing off the masses by jumping to USB-C on that year, like that year. But like, I just can't, like, it's so annoying that you can't plug in your iPhone to your computer and then like with the charging cable that it comes with. Mm. That's so frustrating. It's never been like that. You know, there's never been a time where you couldn't plug your phone into your computer.
Yeah.
With
it's exciting.
With the cable that it comes
because,
with.
Because, you know, apart from charging, there are so many other applications for this, like external monitors and all these other, like, you know, technically you could plug this into a GPU and do some like crazy stuff. Like there's so much stuff that you can do with these devices through USB-C. Mm-hmm. I'm totally for it. I'm not against that at all, but.
Same. Yeah.
I don't know. That Apple Pencil clicking to the side, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, well, it pisses me off because I have the old Apple Pencil and
yeah, but this new one has a flat side.
With lightning. Right, but the old one charges with lightning still. So like, what am I going to do with that thing? Like it came with an adapter. I don't know where the hell the thing is now. That thing's gone. That was my turn to spend $10 on an adapter. I'm a fucking idiot.
Yeah. If I had a ton of disposable income, okay, well, if I had a ton of disposable income, I would buy the maxed out iMac Pro for $13,500. But
the 1 terabyte?
The what?
The 1 terabyte one?
The iMac Pro?
That comes. You said iPad. I thought you said you're talking about iPad Pro.
No. The maxed out iMac Pro, like the most expensive one you can get, is
for $14,000.
$13,500.
Right. I thought you were going to $1,400 for the max that iPad Pro. That's
No, I would. Well, I'd do that too. But yeah, these iPad Pros are pretty cool, and I think I might get the small one. I mean, I know that like people say
the 11?
They think the small one, and then they get the big one, and they're like, okay, actually, this is about right. But I like the smaller form factor.
Erin has the 12.9, the last year's model or something like that her work gave her to do stuff on, and I like having it around, but I could never wield that thing in public. Like, I have a friend who uses that on his commute to work, and it's just, he's sitting on the train. You know, he gets on in like Bay Ridge, so it's definitely not like a, it's not a crowded train when he's getting on, so he can grab a seat and kind of just hunker down and watch his iPad. But like wielding a like a 13-inch device on the subway is just, it's, I like, it looks like I'm just about to smash it. Like it feels when I hold it, I feel like it's about to break when I move it, and it just, it doesn't feel like a cheap machine, but it just feels like I'm, that much glass in my hand with that thin factor, I'm gonna sit on it and break it 100%.
Yeah, I don't know. I, even like the smaller ones, what, like a say 11-inch display now?
It's 11 and 12.9.
It's apparently the size, like about the size of a, you know, a standard piece of printer paper. And even that, it feels like a little big. Like I think that's a little big for me. I love the old, like the Mini 2, I think is the one that I have still. And it's, the storage is too small and it's kind of slow, but you know, that little 8-inch screen, it's like a perfect little reading tablet. I love it. I want something like that, but with a pencil.
I just like the big screen for the comic books. The Flow Motion thing that's on there. Like, I don't know if you ever got a chance to see last year's iPad Pros.
No. I think my mom has things, one, actually. Like, should play with it.
Yeah. Erin got herself one of those, and that thing, I love scrolling and like swiping around that thing. Like the frame rate is so good. And when I go back to mine, I have the first generation iPad Pro. It's just like, it seems clunkier. It's not like slower, but like, it is not as pleasing to look at when I'm like swiping between comic book pages. It's just like, it's like playing a video game and having motion blur on almost, you know, it is just that, you know, the blur is a lot nicer.
Yeah. It is crazy that you can get 1 terabyte of storage on one of these things now. That's nuts.
They're moving towards that as just like, that's what they want college students to be buying now. And it makes way more sense, honestly. Like, I'm going to be completely transparent here. Like, this was when I went to college in 2005, you know, like my graduation present from my parents was a PowerBook G4, which was like, it wasn't top of the line at the time, by all means. I think it had 2 gigabytes of RAM, maybe. It had 1 gigabyte of RAM, I think. Yeah. Two sticks of 512 in there. I ended up upgrading it to 1.5 gigs by the time I was done. But yeah, like 1 gig of RAM. I think I had probably 160 or maybe 320 gigs of space on there. I think it was more like 180 or something. It was just like, it was great at the time. You know, it wasn't top of the line, but it was like still a PowerBook G4. And did I need that going into freshman year? Probably not. But like, it lasted me 8 years, and it, like, I learned how to edit audio on that. Like, that was GarageBand for me, and I learned GarageBand inside and out in that machine. But I could have done that on a MacBook Air had it been invented. There wasn't, like, their Mac offerings were not there. There was no MacBook back then. It was PowerBook or bust. And then the following year, they came out with MacBook Pro and MacBook. So, like, college students had a clearer choice. Like, oh, they need the MacBook. But nowadays, what I'm saying is that a college student's choice is, at that point, you know, was the MacBook, and now the college student's choice should be like the MacBook equivalent is not the MacBook anymore. It's the iPad. You know, it's this thing that can do everything that a college student needs to do, like that's doing basic college stuff. That's not doing like CS or whatever. You know, they're doing Safari browsing, researching, paper typing. That's what like most college kids are doing, and an iPad will suit them just fine. And even the designers now with the Photoshop stuff on there. Like, if you're going to college and you need Photoshop, that seems like a great option to have.
Maybe. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. we got to have people try that app out.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
The demo was better than dumb.
I didn't honestly watch it.
They did another, they're showing off like the AR capabilities of Photoshop. Who cares?
Yeah.
So gimmicky. God, I hate AR. Yeah. Like, I was really excited about it back when it was new, but Apple's been using it in their demos for like about 3 years now. And they haven't done a single thing that's excited me. And I don't know if they ever will. It's dumb. Who wants to just hold their device up and look at a table
it's
to play
funny.
A game?
Like, have you used the measure tool in your phone?
Yeah, I've used it. I used the one, like, they Sherlocked an app for that. There was an app for that when AR first came around, but they added it. It's fine. It's whatever.
Right. That's what I mean. Like, I feel like most users don't know that exists on their phone. But I if you had asked me if it was like it would, that's something I would be like, oh, that seems really useful. But I haven't used it once for any practical purposes.
It's not.
And
as
if I had to measure something, I'd probably go look for a tape measure.
Yeah, I would too, because when it came out, I tested it. I sat in a chair. I wasn't like standing up, moving around. I sat in a chair, and I measured the distance from the floor to the ceiling, and I knew exactly how high that is because I have a measuring tape and I measured it myself, and it was off by, like, you know, in some cases like 7 inches, which is just not okay. It's just not it's not there. And that's
well,
fine.
What do you use, a 7 plus?
Yeah,
6S plus.
It might be better with the depth cameras, like that came on that started on the 8.
Who knows? Maybe their motion processors are better. I think those are on, that's on the 8, I think, the motion
processors.
It's
almost definitely better on the newer ones. And there's a lot of cool stuff I want to play with on the newer devices. Like, there's this new app where you can actually control your phone with your eyes, but it has to be one of the newer cameras, like the XR or the XS, which sounds really cool. Like, you can literally just control your device with your eyes. You can open stuff up. You can move stuff around.
That's creepy. And
it is really
like
creepy.
It's
kind of a cool demo. But the AR stuff is just silly. But I can't get an iPad Pro instead of an iMac or a MacBook, Mike. I can't do it. I'm a programming student.
Right. Well, okay. So you are right. You're not one of the ones that needs the iPad Pro.
Yeah. Which is it's a shame. But the iPad Pro is a very cool machine, and when you compare the prices of your configuration for an iPad Pro, even like the biggest one, and you compare that to a 13-inch MacBook Air, it's like, oh man, you could get away without spending like a ton of money and get a cellular iPad Pro for like $700 less than you would a MacBook, but. I don't know. I would feel more secure with a MacBook. I'd be able to get things done a lot faster because I have no doubt that you can get things done on an iPad, and some people are able to do it very quickly. But I think in most cases, like, you're going to be able to get it done faster on a computer. Like,
oh, what about the keyboard? How do you feel about keyboards?
For the iPad?
Because you... No, for the MacBook. So your old MacBook is a 2012 15-inch, right? So that thing has the old whatever keyboard, the old traditional
I have keyboard. No qualms with the new keyboard.
Have you used one extensively?
For like 10 minutes while waiting in an Apple store.
Yeah, I mean, your iMac is pretty similar, but for some reason it's so much more effective than and like less failure prone than the built-in ones. I guess we have to wait and see. Like, honestly, I haven't heard a lot of whining. I've definitely heard like the fringe cases for the 2018s. You know, like, I've heard like a lot of whiners, like, because Marco always makes sure to retweet people whining about their keyboards. Like, his mission in life is to make Apple realize they're dumb, which they are a lot of time. But like, so, but the complaints for the 2016 and 2017 ones, that was like, you know, a chorus of people just being like, just talking about these failure rates and whatever. And like the 2018s, they made those improvements with like the little membrane underneath. And like, I've definitely heard still people complaining, but I don't know. I just feel like those people are just born to whine, and I'm waiting to see if the multitudes start chiming in on that. We'll see though. We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just need something reliable. I love my MacBook Pro, my early 2013 thing. It makes a lot of noise. That fan is spinning loud when I'm using RX, but like,
I'm amazed that you're able to do what you do. Like, listening to Goodwin, I'm like, man, this show sounds amazing. And then knowing that like you're doing it on a MacBook, and knowing that MacBook is making noise while you're doing it, it's like, I would think that the noise of the MacBook would be distracting while you're like doing the edits.
Well, the only time that it fires up is when I'm running like a significant like denoise in RX or whatever, you know, like when I'm doing a really heavy process. Most like I'm doing a lot of like precision editing in that, so, you know, doing a spectral repair on like some plosives or whatever, that is something that takes like 3 seconds to process. But like if I'm doing a denoise on an hour and a half long audio track, which is what I have to do, then that'll be like probably like a minute and 30 seconds where the fan is just like cooking, you know. This thing gets up wicked hot, buddy.
Yeah, I'd love to test it out on a MacBook Air. Like, I look at these things and it's like, man, they're so tiny. How could they possibly do the stuff that you want it to do? But then they do.
I feel like they're going to get rid of that, what do you call it? The MacBook Escape?
The MacBook Pro without the touch bar.
The two Thunderbolt port MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
Like, that's a dual core. They didn't update it in 2018. So yeah. The other 13-inch 2018 MacBook Pros got, you know, quad core support instead of dual core. So that is cool. But the 2017 two Thunderbolt MacBook Pro just kind of stayed the same. And they didn't update it.
Yeah. It's a shame. Because, that's the one I was looking at.
Well, clearly anticipation of the MacBook Air, the new one, because the MacBook Air is I think it's still like a 1.7 gigahertz dual core processor, but it's still a dual core processor with two Thunderbolt 3 ports on the side and Touch ID now, and thus a T2 chip, which the other one didn't have for the 2017. So I just feel like they're going to phase out the 2017 two Thunderbolt 2 port. And that's going to be it.
So then they have the MacBook Air, and then the MacBook Pro. That simplifies it a little bit, but you still, first of all, they still have the old MacBook Air available on the website, which is absurd.
Yeah. Second. It's not absurd.
It is absurd.
They left the 2015 MacBook Pro 15-inch on the website until 2017, I think.
That's also absurd. The fact that they have those computers, those are bad computers. Anybody selling those to people today should be...
What?
Yeah, they should feel bad.
At those prices, yes. They should feel bad for selling at that price. Absolutely. That price should have come down at least $100.
It should be clearanced.
Right.
They need to go. Like, I know that they're just trying to get rid of stock, but it's insane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. It just feels stupid.
I just can't get past the fact that the MacBook and the MacBook Air exist simultaneously because I just don't see
that's
a difference.
The MacBook has to go. The MacBook has to just go bye-bye. It was a nice try.
It was a nice fantasy little machine. I mean, I think I've said this before, maybe on this show or any podcast, but it's like the fantasy machine. You look at it and you're like, it's not that you want that machine to be yours. It's that you want to be right for that machine. You want to have a machine that all you can basically do is just word process and use the internet and not have to do any like,
that's why I want that adorable for my living room.
It's crazy. Yeah. Like it's a great little laptop machine. It's a coffee shop machine.
Upload it.
It's the writer's paradise. It's all you need to write your novel.
Until the keyboard breaks.
Ugh.